to a heart rate back. Listen to wizards and witches. Listen to jazz play. Listen to dogs and mice. Listen to Roman.
Well, hello everybody out there in Radio Land. Oh, this is Alice Brock, by the way. The real Alice from Alice's Restaurant. You're listening to me on WGXC 90.7 FM on your dial in Accra. And I just want to tell you that I think community radio is the best thing in the world. And I hope you're loving every minute of it.
Do you have 17 cents a day to support a platform for many diverse voices to have their say on the local airwaves? Just 17 cents a day, a monthly $5 recurring donation, can help keep local youth on the air at WGXC 90.7 FM. Your monthly sustaining support will keep the airwaves full of music from around the world and around the corner. WGXC needs 500 sustaining supporters to make sure there is one spot on the dial where the community can have access to its own airwaves. Make your pledge today at wgxc.org/donate and do your part to protect an important source of local news, information, and entertainment. With just 17 cents a day, you will do your part to protect your favorite frequency. Become a sustaining supporter today. Go to wgxc.org/donate now. WGXC underwriting support is provided by Gemini Construction, a full-service contracting firm specializing in complete electrical construction services. Gemini Construction, serving Greene and surrounding counties for over 40 years. For more information, contact 518-622-9829.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Bindlestiff Family Circus of Hudson, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. Become a WGXC sustaining supporter today. Go to wgxc.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
Good evening. You are listening to Tech Talk with Bill and Ralph. I always say Ralph and Bill, but today I'm going to say Bill and Ralph because I've decided that I've conducted a coup and take it over, and now it is the Bill and Ralph show instead of the Ralph and Bill show. But you are listening to the Tech Talk. And Ralph, while you're there, could you give the call-in numbers?
I could, but only if you promise to say, welcome to the Ralph and Bill show. Otherwise,
welcome to the Bill and Ralph show.
No, you've got that exactly backwards.
Call-in number is 518-697-7400 or 518-622-5598.
Yes.
So that you could talk to Bill and secondarily to Ralph.
Or if you want to actually answer your question to Ralph and then secondarily to Bill. But hello, Upper Hudson, Mid Hudson, Side Hudson Valley. Welcome to WGXC Tech Talk, where all of your technical glitches, gremlins, and gaffes can lead to interesting questions, to play Stump the Collier, or to get erudite answers from Ralph. Welcome to Tech Talk all.
Wow.
Oh, listen, it's charge. And Bill, I am really impressed. I heard the lead-in, and I see you've upgraded to dial-up. That is very impressive. You are the tech man.
I am always on the cutting edge of societal evolution.
If you play your cards right, Bill Collier, I will see if I can't get you an AOL account.
Oh, yeah. I want one of those discs.
Oh,
I think
you know,
have a call coming in.
While I was clearing out the garage today, one of those discs turned up. If I didn't throw it away, I might send it to you.
Yeah, I remember they were, the little cases were like a wood case. Which
I thought was pretty neat.
I don't. They weren't. They were actually plastic, Bill, but plastic wood, you know, for a tech challenge person
actually,
like you.
I got a case that was made out of wood.
Popsicle sticks, happened. Right?
Mm-hmm. Are you ready,
and it's ready as I will ever be. What are you doing for Thanksgiving, Bill?
I am going over to a friend's house. And since he's a World War II buff, we do Thanksgiving, but we bring our German and American in different outfits, and we actually take pictures and just have a good old time kind of reenacting the war.
World War II. World War II reenactors, itself, yeah. But, well, I hope you'll get masked up.
And the meal is usually very old-fashioned.
K-rations, eh?
Hold on. Betsy from Vermont is calling the World
War II. Oh, okay. We'll put it aside your holiday festivities for now. And welcome, Betsy from Vermont.
Good evening, gentlemen. Nice to hear your voices again.
Nice to hear yours.
My question is a probably philosophical and maybe even a metaphysical one, which is why are printers so darn much trouble?
Why are printers so darn much trouble?
Yes. I've never had one that I didn't have to go hand-to-hand with all the time to make it talk to my computer or take documents. I don't know why they're so in or unwilling to communicate with the computers that they're supposed to get along with.
I cannot disagree with you. I have three printers in my house, and sometimes at least one of them works. It's amazing. I have an HP Envoy, and for some reason, my phone I can print from my phone, but I can't print from my computer. And then I have another printer that I can print from my computer, but not my phone. And there's no earthly reason why. So I think part of it is they put, basically, they cheaped out on the printers, and they charge you exorbitant fees for the ink and the toner, which is how they really make their money. Because printers are pretty cheap now. I mean, heck, you know, if you refill the ink three times, it's probably cost you more to refill the ink than it did to get the printer.
But it seems like the part of the printer that's the least cooperative is the part that should be the cheapest to produce, which is the part that talks to the computer.
Well, evidently, that's where they cheaped out big time.
If I might, Bill, though, and Betsy, though.
And I know you probably don't have these problems because you're not.
I have never had a problem with my printer. And so, you know, the years ago.
The Gutenberg press doesn't even use a computer.
It's not a Gutenberg press. I have a Benedictine monk in my basement. And whenever I need a document, I just call him up on his iPhone, and I dictate it to him. I can hear him, his goose quill pen scratching up on the parchment. So I really recommend knocking off of these electronics, which are really overrated, and get yourself a Benedictine monk.
Probably more reliable, but maybe more expensive.
Well, I'll look
around.
They
don't eat very much.
All right. Thank you.
No. Betsy, just all monkeying around aside. Do you use a PC or do you use a Mac?
PC. I have a Surface, actually, and it's a fairly new one.
Well, yes, but you and Bill both use PCs, and both of you have problems with your printers. I, on the other hand, use a MacBook Pro, as does my best girl. And we actually share a brother printer. We plug in, and it works like a charm. I never have problems communicating with the printer. So I really think that's because PCs are inferior, and therefore they have a hard time actually doing stuff that's anything more complicated than connecting to AOL so you can
go to dial up and download your email. Bill, don't you think the evidence points to this is a PC problem, not a computer problem?
No, because I know plenty of people that have Apple that have the same problem. I think you're an anomaly, and also I don't know what kind of printer you have, but I
brother
being at your house and having issues getting things printed.
Yes, you probably did, but I'm just saying it may be that this is just the final nail in the coffin for personal computers.
I don't think there's any nail. There's no coffin. Everything is good over here in PC land. Am I right, Betsy?
Yes, I would think so. I wonder if part of the difficulty is the wireless aspect of it as opposed to a hardwired, plugged-in kind of thing.
Wait a minute.
It's very tricky getting it right because it creates its own network, which you then have to connect your computer to in addition to connecting to your regular Wi-Fi internet. And that's a problem for Apple as well. It's a normal thing.
No, it isn't. We just plug our computer. We just plug our computer right into the printer using an Ethernet cable. And so
you're in the Stone Age. You have to actually use a cable. Whereas I am downstairs about 30 feet away from my printer. And yes, sometimes I have to pick a different one, but basically I could sit down here and just click and print a document. And then when I'm ready to go upstairs, I get my document.
Okay.
But Betsy, you can't do that. That's why you don't have any problems with your printer because
right.
you don't use.
And we don't mind because, you know, I mean, my best girl.
You don't
girl
mind because, you know, you don't have a choice. So.
My best girl has her laptop right next to the computer on her desk. And whenever it's plugged into one of those Ethernet ports on the side of her MacBook Pro, her elegant, high functioning, overpriced but an enviable MacBook Pro, and bing, bada bing, the printed document comes right out of the printer, except when she's out of paper. And then we have to put more paper in and push the little blue button, and bing, it works. So, Betsy, have you considered investing $2.95 in an Ethernet cable and plugging your computer into the printer? Your name is not Betsy, Bill. Let Betsy answer for herself.
Well, that might be something to try. I didn't really know that my printer would necessarily have such adaptability for cables, but perhaps it does. It's around back and it's dark over there.
I've never seen a printer that does not plug in with an Ethernet cable. Now maybe Bill has discovered some because he tells me he's done his DNA sample and it turns out that he's almost pure Neanderthal. So if it's possible to be atavistic, Bill Collier's got it down. So, Betsy, try it. I recommend it's a very inexpensive fix, and it will save you an enormous amount of hassles. So let me encourage you to give it a try and call us up after you've tried it and let us know how it went.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Good question. Thank you. Thank you. Bye.
Thanks. Good night.
Back to my festivities for Thanksgiving. I don't know. What do you do? Couple day at all, Ralph?
Usually we bake a turkey and with stuffing and trim and jellied cranberry sauce and mashed potatoes and other good things. The problem is, however, this year is it's just the two of us, and we were not able to find a turkey small enough to not completely take over about a third of the refrigerator and then leave us eating turkey leftovers for literally weeks, if not months afterwards. So we're just going to try to figure it out. Of course, you, if you're as long as you promise to wear a mask while you're eating, you and your best girl are welcome to come over and celebrate.
Well, no, we'll be celebrating with Mr. Joe, Dr. Joe, and his wife Anne, and Jean will be all with us, and we will be having turkey and all the fixings, and listening to 1940s music the whole time.
Sounds very high tech.
Well, it's the opposite of high tech. Do you know how the turkey became the bird of choice for Thanksgiving and for Christmas, for that matter?
Well, I do know that Benjamin Franklin wanted the turkey to be the national bird.
No. This is a joke. So, you know, the turkey basically has no manners. During the, when Jesus was born in the manger, all the animals and the Magi
In April.
The turkey said in German, Boa, ist das ein hässlicher Kind? Which basically means, boy, is that an ugly kid. And that's how the turkey became the meal of choice for the Thanksgiving and Christmas.
It sounds like a German joke, and the Germans are not uniformly famed for their sense of humor.
You know, that is totally wrong. Germans are very funny.
Yes, well, we do find them funny, but not necessarily funny. Ha ha. Okay, listen, WGXA listening area and the world around the World Wide Web. Tech Talk, 518-622-2598. Surely we have other. Listen, the turkeys are invading, Bill. I think you've antagonized them.
I don't understand what you're saying.
No, because you speak fluent German and Turkey. No, I'm trying to encourage our other devoted followers to call in here to Tech Talk at 518-622-2598.
Absolutely. Well, so you're not going to have a huge Thanksgiving, and you're going to do it with Apple products, whereas I will have PC products. So,
yes.
I can actually afford turkey. So.
Right. But if I could actually, if you've ever tried to stuff a suckling pig's mouth full of a PC instead of an Apple, you'll understand why apples are infinitely superior.
This is going to be an ongoing thing. I can see. I can tell.
Probably.
Do you have any updates? And I'm going to check here. You know what time it is, right? You know what update time it is.
You mean tech news?
No.
Ouch.
Thank you. It is TikTok update.
Boy, you sound like a cartoon character.
Listen, Charlie D'Amelio, who is a lady of some controversy, makes history with 100 million TikTok followers despite backlash. So she's she's a big social media star. One of TikTok's highest earners, and she attained more than 100 million followers days after she was bombarded with criticism for a controversial video that she posted that many viewers found flippant and entitled and led her to losing a chunk of her following, a number she has now gained back and then some. So evidently she did a flippant video. Oh, she's so awesome. Everybody got angry except for the people that didn't get angry, who evidently are most people. So this article was sort of, you know.
Wait a minute.
One of our TikTok updates. So TikTok is going strong. This lady's got 100 million people, 16 years old. When I was 16 years old, the only people following me were security at every mall. You know
right,
what I mean?
But what insensitive thing did she do on TikTok? If you could reveal that without antagonizing the FCC.
Well, I'm not sure.
What was her name again?
Charlie D'Amelio. And now I probably butchered her name terribly. She's probably gonna make a video about me now, which is fine.
I hope so. It will make you.
I mean, she could literally make a video about how horrible a person I am. And that's
yes.
fine.
Yes.
But yeah, so she lost a million TikTok followers.
Yes, but she's got 160 million TikTok followers. So that's like a rounding error. Oh, okay, fine.
Yeah. She did an episode, Dinner with the Amalios. In the clip, the family and D'Amelio sit down for a paella dinner prepared for them by private chef Aaron May after Dixie encounters a snail in the traditional Spanish meal. May explains to the table, "It's classic paella, and it's actually an omen of good luck and fortune," to which Charlie scoffs, "Liars." After everyone at the table urges her to try it, Dixie takes a small bite of the small snail. Wow, she actually did this thing. Before gagging and running outside, okay, and stuff. So everybody's upset because she ate a snail and got all upset because she's got a private chef, and they're not happy, evidently. And that Shekel didn't like that either, by the way, my dog. He's actually not. Shekel, you are on the air. We have a caller.
But it seems to be a dog.
Alice in Albany, before you ask anything, I need to ask you one question. Were you riveted to your radio speaker by my story about this Charlie girl?
Are you asking me?
Yes. Were you riveted to your radio set by the story of Charlie?
I was beyond riveted.
Thank you so much.
Well, Alice from Albany, if Bill misbehaves, I just want you to remember two magic words. Sick 'em.
Oh, is that for his dog?
Exactly.
His dog was a good dog.
You know, he's got a bad dog. I mean, bad dog.
Oh.
He's not a bad dog.
His name is just bad dog.
No, his name is Shekel.
Okay, whatever.
Right, let's go on to Alice, who has something more important to say.
Well,
how is that possible?
I have a question that I don't think either one of you have weighed in on. And here's my question. Do you think that the internet should be regulated?
Wow, that is a loaded question.
What do you think?
No, let's just unload it. No, Alice from Albany. The internet should not, quote, be regulated, unquote.
And why do you say that, Ralph?
Because the people with the authority to regulate it don't even understand the tip of the iceberg about what it is how the internet works. They don't understand the difference between routers and software and TCP/IP. Bill, just. Let me just show you how even thought leaders like Bill Collier don't know that the internet is lingo for TCP/IP. Bill, what does TCP/IP stand for?
You're talking about TCP/IP.
TCP/IP. Yeah. Yes, I'm talking about TCP/IP. What is that? What is that an acronym for, William? And you are probably one of the top 0.1% of people who understand the internet.
Well, it's the transmission control protocol and the internet protocol.
Exactly. If you ask 435 congressmen or 100 U.S. senators,
it doesn't matter that they don't know TCP/IP. TCP/IP. I always say TCP/IP for some reason.
Right.
They don't know that they don't. They don't know how commenting works. They don't know how sharing works.
They don't understand how you could post something on your wall and 100,000 people could potentially see it, and then you could post something else and only 3 people see it. They have no idea how or why that works.
Right, so we're talking about congressmen, senators, executive branch agents, and regulators like the Federal Communications Commission, which is very, very good at regulating radio, may I point out. But the Internet is not part of its franchise, and therefore they don't have the staff or the expertise to do it.
I mean, by regulate, do you mean like the bandwidth? Do you mean to make sure that rural areas get it? Are you talking about disinformation or hate, or, you know, it really depends on what people mean by regulate.
Well, let's find out what Alice means, what Alice from Albany means by regulate. Alice, what do you have in mind here?
I don't have anything in mind. I just know that there's a lot of stuff on the Internet that is not very helpful to the world. And do you think that there should be somebody, people who control what's on the Internet?
Not really. I mean, there's so many things that are not helpful to people in the world that aren't just online. I mean, they're everywhere. A lot of churches. If we were going to regulate things for not being helpful, we would definitely want to start with Congress.
Yeah, let's regulate the regulators for starters. That'd I like awesome. That idea, Bill. Yeah,
we're sorry, Senator, but you have been
deregulated,
platformed from everything. Goodbye.
Exactly. Go back to your room. Plus, we're taking away your Twitter account. Look, if we could put Alice in charge of regulating the government, I would be all over that, like a hobo on a ham sandwich. So, Alice, pack a bag. Bill and I are going to pull some strings and see if we can't put you in charge of regulating the regulators,
Your reason for not regulating the Internet is that there's nobody qualified to regulate the Internet?
Well, it's worse than that, because they think they're qualified. But yes, as a matter of fact, let's get really down to brass tacks. What, aside from kitten videos, you know, what is most of the stuff that goes on the Internet? It's email, it's postings on social media, it's speech, right? It's people saying things either to you or to each other. Am I right or wrong about that?
Yeah,
well,
that's
actually,
right.
I'm asking Alice, Bill.
Mentioned over the air.
I'm asking Alice, Bill, not you.
Well,
so,
I'd like Bill to weigh in on that too.
Okay, but before Bill weighs in, we're going to get you to weigh in. Since most of the stuff that goes on the Internet is expression, is people either saying things or singing things or making cute TikTok videos in which they're showing things, it's like the Internet is one big show and tell session. And it just so happens there's this thing called the First Amendment to the Constitution of the United States that says Congress shall make no law abridging the freedom of speech or of the press. So right there in the Constitution, in the Bill of Rights, by the way, that's Bill's nickname, Bill of Rights.
Yeah.
It's right there. It says Congress can't do this because the people who founded America, people who created the United States of America, did not trust the government to censor us, did not trust the government to tell us what we can or cannot say, or what we can or cannot communicate by media. Back then it was newspapers, but the principle extended to things like radio and then TV and now the Internet. So this freedom of speech and of the press is a very big deal. And the guys who created America and wrote the Constitution and risked their lives for liberty, for life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, okay, they didn't think that the government should be trusted to regulate our speech, and I don't think so either. So, Alice, how do you like them apples, or how do you like them PCs, as the case may be? And then you can cross-examine Collier.
But that raises another question, doesn't it?
What question might that be?
It raises the question of what if somebody is hell-bent, forgive my language, on spreading disinformation?
Well, the Supreme Court, I'm a lawyer, so before we torture Bill on this particular thing that is slightly over his pay grade, the right to freedom of speech and freedom of the press is a very strong right, but it's not absolute.
Right, and but so, does it include the ability to spread disinformation?
Well,
is
here's
that protected?
The thing. It does not give you the right, as a famous Supreme Court justice once said, and I'm forgetting his name, but it'll come back to me. I think it might have been Felix Frankfurter, who was no relation to Harry Hamburger. The First Amendment does not give you the right to shout fire in a crowded theater. So if by exercising your freedom of speech, you are actually precipitating serious harm by like creating a panic and getting people to out of panic in a crowded place, stampede for the exits where people are going to get hurt or died, that is not within the realm of that. That's not what the founders meant by freedom of speech.
It's not protected. It's not a protected.
That is not protected. On the other hand, most of the guys who set up the country, like Thomas Jefferson, for instance, said the solution to bad speech is not no speech, is not less speech, it's more speech. So if somebody is spreading misinformation, the founders said rather than make the government an arbiter over truth and fiction, over true real news and fake news, because you know the government is not a bunch of saints, it's a bunch of people just like us. And what you really want to do is you want to encourage other people who know better to come in and have a spirited argument about it, under the theory that you, Alice, are smart enough that if you hear people arguing about something, what's true, what's false, what's, you know, what's constructive, what's destructive, what's misleading, what is enlightening, you, after by listening to these people freely argue about this, are going to be coming to the right conclusion, are more likely than the government to come to the right conclusion and decide what you are going to believe rather than what the government wants you to believe.
Okay, Ralph, that's all well and good. But what if you got somebody who's really noisy?
What if you got somebody who is what?
Really noisy. Like way noisier than everybody else.
Yes. I'm not sure I understand. Okay,
what if it doesn't? No, let me finish. What if it doesn't engender conversation? What if it stifles conversation?
Can you give me an example here?
No.
No?
No.
Well, look, for instance,
You're a smart guy. You can make up an example.
If you go to Facebook and somebody is going on and on and on, and you're tired of listening to them, or they're trying to hog the conversation, you can just flip to another page. You can flip to another conversation. You can flip to another person. Nothing is compelling you. You know, if you're on Twitter, there's millions of tweets a day. And yes, I personally don't like Donald Trump's tweets. I consider them to be consistently misleading and obnoxious. But nothing forces me to follow Donald Trump or to pay attention to his tweets. There's room for everybody to talk on the internet.
What if you're not inclined?
What if you're not inclined to what?
To speak. So you're saying that people have to behave like the people that they don't want to hear.
No, you can tune. What I'm saying is, you can tune them out. You can easily tune them out. Now it's a little harder when the media feels it's necessary to report the tweets of Donald Trump And so everywhere you go, when you're watching the news or reading the newspaper, and they're reporting their tweets, which is they feel is a form of legitimate news, then I admit it becomes obnoxious, and it's a little bit hard to get away from. But sometimes the cure is worse than the disease, and sometimes by allowing free speech to be suppressed by a government censor, you can make you can go out of the frying pan and right into the fire. So if you give me an example.
Well, Ralph, if I may chime in ever so briefly.
What do you mean, if you may? You just did.
I am chiming in. I'm amazed, you know, I don't like the disinformation. I don't like the cackling and the yelling. And I will block someone if they get on my nerves. I literally will. I don't have time for it.
Wait. Tell Alice how she can block people.
Let me finish, Ralph.
How she can block people.
I'm not going to – I'll get into that. Just let me get to my thought, Ralph. The thing about regulating speech and deciding, you know, what is or is not disinformation is we live in a very partisan environment. Democrats think everything Republicans say is disinformation. Republicans know everything. No, I'm joking. Republicans think everything Democrats say is I think everything everybody from Apple says is disinformation. So we're going to get into this sort of, who's going to, so if you win the election and your party wins, you get to be the truth czar of the internet. Look, that's a problem. But what amazes me about the process that goes into thinking we need to regulate the internet is, on one hand, we say everybody should vote, and we trust the voters to decide the fate of the country. But on the other hand, we say, well, we got to protect the voters from information that might warp their brains. Listen, I take my my belief in what is or isn't true as a responsibility to myself. I check things. If people don't check things, you regulating it to try to make sure they get the right information isn't really going to get them the right information. And isn't really going to solve your core problem. So I'm thinking, listen, if you're telling me the average person can't be trusted to sort their own information, then we shouldn't have a democracy. And these people shouldn't be voting. But I actually don't think that. I think the average person really does check things out, really is dubious about half the claims, very cynical. I mean, advertising claims, political ads. You know, they've done studies. People don't trust political ads. They just don't trust them. And rightly so. But disinformation, I mean, I see it all the time, and I see it from the media spent, I don't know, 4 years talking about a dossier that we turned out was fake. Everything was faked about the whole daggone thing. Who's going to regulate those guys? And, of course, the other side has got their own. Everybody's putting out. It's almost like they're all sitting around saying, gee, I wish this was true about my opponent. I'm going to say it about my opponent. And I'll just say it's true, and I don't have any evidence, and that's perfectly fine. But now the average person out there is looking at it going, except for your partisans, but for the most part, most of the people I know, and I know liberals and conservatives, half of everything we see, we're always like, wait a day or two, and that story will be changed too. So I think people are starting to get more sophisticated about what is or isn't disinformation. I don't know about regulating it. I'm very leery of the regulator could be the fake news generator themselves.
And that's Alice, you can show Bill the error of his ways now.
No, no, I can't. I'm just asking. I wanted to hear somebody talk about this that thinks about this.
Now, Alice, I would like to say on another note, this being, I think it's the day after the anniversary of the great, you can get anything you want at Alice's restaurant. There you go. I did it. You gave me the excuse, so I sang it.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you, Bill.
Thank you,
Bill. Please make sure to send a check to ASCAP BMI, okay?
Oh, no.
Oh, yes. Alice, thank you for calling. You raise a very profound, very deep, very thoughtful question. And I'm glad you gave our listeners a chance to give them some food for thought.
Okay. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Alice from Albany. Bye.
Well, at least I didn't sing the happy birthday song, because then I'd be done. I'd be done, done, and done.
Yes, you would. But
well, it is the anniversary thereof. Now, Mr. Arley Guthrie is a very nice man.
Arlo, it's Arlo, not Arley.
Did I say Arlo? Arley?
You said Arley, which is actually somebody else's name. But Bill, I think we might have another call coming in.
Maybe we do. Maybe we don't. I don't see any call. I have my spy glass, my spy camera on your house, Banco, and I have it on Tom right now.
Yes.
Our auspicious and most awesome
Peeping Tom, right?
Yes. We are the Peeping Toms of Tom. We're Peeping Tom on Tom. Grab the microphone and let us all know how, unintelligible we really are. Okay, so back to my story. You remember the story?
About Arlo Guthrie?
No, not Arlo Guthrie. I can't do it now, but I used to be able to, there was a 17-minute version of that song.
Yes.
I used to be able to sing the entire song, and I remember the whole, it finds out the guy's blind. Well, he ain't bought 10 color glossy pictures and
circles and arrows and circles paragraphs and arrows on the back.
And signifying one this and that and the murder of a murder scene or something. It turns out he was blind. So, as I can't say all of the song on the radio, because even though the song is, what is it, 1967 that was released?
Yes.
Yeah, I couldn't actually describe all of the content of the song, especially when he goes to get injected and infected and all that.
Right.
You don't remember. You're too young.
Oh, no. I was, 1967. I was 15 at the time. You weren't even born.
No, that is true. That's, we're very suspicious about the whereabouts of you and my mother at that time.
Yep, as well you might be.
Mm-hmm. She denies everything, by the way. She denies it.
Okay, so, Bill, who's calling now?
We got Garrett in Hudson.
Good evening, gentlemen. Garrett Roach here from Hudson, New York. Have you ever heard the song by an Australian group called Smokey? The song is entitled Living Next Door to Alice.
No, sing a few bars and we'll fake it. Garrett from Hudson.
Well, I gotta get used to not living next door to Alice.
Whoa!
There's another part that goes, oh, I don't know where she's leaving or where she, I don't know if she's leaving or where she's going to go, something, something, something.
I guess she's got her reasons, but I just don't want to know, because for 24 years, I've been living next door to Alice.
Yeah, for 24 years, that's the one.
Well, are you living next door to Alice?
No, but I also have a suggestion for what you were speaking about earlier, the turkeys. A good friend of mine actually named Charlie Rogers, who painted the Venus Rising from the Sea statue here in Hudson, New York in 1974. Charlie suggests cook the turkey upside down, and there'll be no basting needed because the white meat, the breast, will soak in the juices, on its own, and then after it's cooked, let it sit for about an hour, and you'll have nice juicy white meat, and you stuff it with an apple and an onion, and put some, bread stuffing inside too. So cook the turkey upside down in a roasting pan, as Charlie suggested.
That's genius. And we also, Garrett, can you stuff it with a PC instead of an apple? That's all Bill Collier wants to know.
No, no, you can put an Apple in that. You can burn the Apple up all you want.
I see, but no PCs. Well, Garrett, thank you very much. Garrett from Hudson.
No, I'm not.
More than welcome, gentlemen. And if anyone gives you a hard time,
Garrett,
don't let one turkey's gobble ruffle your feather.
Whoa.
Very good.
good law to live by. Now,
thank you.
Thank you, Garrett. And we'll look have a happy Thanksgiving, particularly if you're not a turkey. And we have Michael from Maine on line two.
Michael from Maine.
Hello, Tech Talk.
Now, Michael, on your planet where you come from, do they have Thanksgiving in turkeys?
Yeah, unless this is the Mandela effect and it's like an alternate universe that I've split off from on planet Earth, I believe they do.
Oh, you're from Earth. Oh, okay. Because I was looking at your resume. Right. They got that wrong, so that's fine.
but I have an Earthbound question tonight, okay. And it's about virtual reality. I think around maybe like 2010 or 2012, everyone thought VR is going to overtake everything. Movies are done. Video games, as we know it, are done. Never really took off, but the new Oculus Quest came out, and it's now wireless VR. And I have a question: as in your opinion, do you think VR is going to take off as the next thing?
Ralph, do you want to start? Because I got a thought.
I wonder what that little light bulb floating over your head was signifying, Bill. Let's not let it flicker out. If you have a thought, Let's revel in that, in this rare occurrence. And
wow,
why don't you
really,
ask you to?
I don't know the difference between a light bulb and a spike on a helmet.
That's right. To share your share this rare celebratory moment where you actually had a thought.
All right. So I don't want to say I don't think it's possible that VR will take off, but I don't think it's a given that it will. I think that the key thing about VR is it has to do really at least two things. There's probably a list I could think about if I really thought about it. But one, it has to have a utilitarian purpose that really serves a functional role that it can do better than you can do just by texting or calling somebody. And two, it has to connect people in a way that feels very real. And I'm not sure if it does a better job than like Skyping people on a video. I know it's more interesting and fun, has a lot of gaming applications, and I think that may be where VR really takes off. I also think VR is going to take off in technical fields like medicine or certain scientific procedures where the tools and the stuff are somewhere and the scientist is somewhere else and they could use VR to actually manipulate them from a distance. But I don't think VR is going to be the next killer app. I don't think it's going to be like email or the phone or anything like that. Again, I could be wrong because, you know, if the populace decides all of a sudden they love everything VR, that's just the way it's going to be. I mean, they liked new Coke for a hot minute and that went away pretty quickly. So I think the bottom line is until VR serves a purpose that is more than just a fanciful, neat thing to a broad cross-section of the population, it's not going to dominate the internet. How's that for an answer?
Thank you for that thoughtful answer. That sounds pretty accurate.
But it does sound pretty accurate, Michael from Maine. It's just tragic that it's also wrong. It's
completely right. And I know that you're going to say that. Ralph likes to disagree with me because he's still upset about the fact that he has to, you know, an Apple when he could have a PC, but he's lost his mojo and couldn't operate a PC. You know, it's just too advanced for him. But do continue with your wrong answer, Ralph.
I see. Well, it's actually the right answer, Bill. But before I come up with my big reveal, let me ask you a really hard question. Have you ever experienced virtual reality?
Yes.
how do you know that what you're experiencing right now is not virtual reality?
You know, there are times when I wish it was.
And times when it probably is. Okay, I've had one experience at Freedom Fest in 2017 with a virtual reality headset, and it was awesome. I mean, it was they set me up an elevator. I walked out onto a veranda on a plank, 100 stories up. I knew I was in a ballroom. I knew the plank was on the floor, and it was so realistic. It felt so realistic walking in this narrow plank 1,000 feet up in the air that I literally could not bring myself to do it. It was that vivid and that compelling. So from the experiential point of view, I believe that when they get the, say, the technical glitches ironed out, it's going to become a very popular kind of thing. Now, that raises two questions. First one is, what do I mean by technical glitches? And the second thing is what niche is it going to fulfill? So here's the thing about virtual reality. It blocks out real reality. And so there you are in this world where you are having these amazing, compelling, incredible experiences, virtual experiences that are primarily visual, although I'm sure they're going to use things like haptic feedback and other ways to augment the other senses. But the bottom line here is, while you're doing virtual reality, you literally can't be doing anything else. Now, they're working on something called augmented reality, where you can actually be walking down the street and you can see Mickey Mouse or Roger Rabbit or somebody apparently walking down the street as well, in a way that doesn't interfere with your ability to carry on your everyday thing. But unlike when you're on a computer or on a smartphone or even a dumb phone like an Android that is...
like an iPhone.
Right, a smartphone like an iPhone. You are still engaged with the world around you. So it is an addition to your both experience and agency or functionality in life. Okay, you can't have that when you're in a VR set. It's like going into a movie theater. You're in an immersive experience, and that's all that you're going to have for that amount of time while you're in that. Now, I guess they are probably working on ways so you can have multiple people in that virtual experience at the same time. But right now, the state of the art is you're isolated. You are all by yourself. So virtual reality is an amazing, compelling virtual experience, but it's by its very nature, unsocial. You're all by yourself, and it's also something that is preclusive of your getting on doing other things, multitasking, if you will. You are in that as if you were in a movie for whatever length of time you're in it. So that doesn't make it, that makes it a kind of niche experience rather than an ambient experience. That's the first thing. The second,
so you agree with what I said, thank you.
Well, I
thing to get to what I said. Virtual reality needs to have a social function that we can't do like how we do through video. Or it needs to have a utilitarian function of some kind. Oh. I said that it would be a gaming thing, an entertaining thing, and it would be a tool that you could use like for technical reasons. I think you pretty much agree with me.
So that's what you meant. Yes. Well, now that you've clarified it, and now that I've expressed it with articulateness, eloquence, and precision.
No, Mike agrees with me. So
right? I see. The other thing is that, you know, putting on a headset. I mean, right now the headsets, they're getting, I understand they're getting better, but they're still kind of clumsy. So you put them over your head. And they're not, you know, like super, they're not super comfy. So if they ever got it down to something as easy to apply.
New rush hour calling, by the way.
Okay. Something as easy and as comfy, as intuitive, say, a pair of glasses, then that's the technical hurdle. So they have the operational hurdle, they have the technical hurdle, but I do believe someday they're going to jump these hurdles. They're going to figure out how to do it, and the next thing you know, everybody's going to be so absorbed in their little own private virtual realities that the human race is going to die out. So,
oh no, I hope not. I think you both made very compelling points.
What's that?
He said it was very compelling.
That's a controversial statement in itself.
Well, it could be, but Michael, we're running out of time, and we've got Wendy from New Rochelle on the other line. Do you have any? Did we answer your question to your satisfaction?
Those great answers.
It's a great question. So thank you very much, Michael, and we hope you'll call again next week.
Okay, I certainly will. Have a good night.
Good night.
Good night. Wendy from New Rochelle online too. Welcome aboard WGXC and Tech Talk.
Thank you. My question is, what's Parler?
Okay. Ralph, do you want to answer this? Because I can answer it real quickly.
Well, why don't you answer it slowly? That way, I won't get a headache trying to keep up with your helium-inflected sounding voice.
You're so nice. Listen, so Parler is, if you're familiar with Twitter, it's sort of like a Twitter clone. It's a little different. It doesn't function as well. It is a it was an app that was created.
Wait, what do you mean it doesn't function as well?
It has a lot of glitches. Sometimes you go in and you can't put their version of a tweet out. You'll try to follow people and it won't work. So it's got a lot of glitches because a lot of people have jumped over to it really fast and they weren't ready for the traffic. So
how much traffic are they getting now?
I believe they're up to 30 some million users, but it could have changed in the last 2 weeks. So they were adding like 2 million a day there for a hot minute.
Okay.
So Parler is so it was reacting.
So Parler is a buggy Twitter, is what you just said.
It is, but I'm sure it'll get better. It was a reaction to what people perceived as Twitter's micromanagement of content, and so people wanted a place where there was less micromanagement of content. It's interesting though, because here's where I think, and I'm not dissing on Parler at all, but Parler is not responding to a market demand, like a market as in money demand, but more of an ideological demand for different groups that feel shunted out of Twitter. So I'm not sure how successful the business model is going to be, because it does appeal to a very small cross section of the population. So that's Parler. It's a buggy kind of Twitter that's an alt platform that has some potential, but we'll see.
Okay, well, it says here in something called the Daily Bulletin that Parler had about 3 million, 3 million members last July, and it gained another 3.5 million viewers the week after the November 3rd elections. So sounds to me like Parler, which, as you say, is a buggy Twitter, but apparently some people believe that it is more friendly to conservative opinion than Twitter is. Personally, I'm not convinced. Plenty of conservatives on Twitter.
But I don't know if that's a money-making thing.
Twitter has 330 million active users.
Yeah, we have about a minute to go. We're clocking down. I hope that answered your question, Wendy.
Thank you very much.
I hope to hear from you next week, and maybe we can get more into this and some other alt platforms we could talk about.
Sounds good.
Yeah. it was a good question. Thank you for pulling up and asking it. Okay, Bill, it's time for you to wrap things up.
Yes, we will wrap things up. Now, you have been listening to Tech Talk with Ralph and Bill on